This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Well, it's not Rick Moore. Rick is away for a few days. We'll have him back next week for a very special show we'll talk about later. This is Sean McCord stepping in, substituting for a few minutes. We've got an interesting show on the living wage at UVA with three guests. But before we begin, there's just a few things I want to say. Because WNRN recently went through a tragedy. Now, if you've been following the news, you know that we lost one of our own. And I didn't know Tim Davis well. We would meet here in the station, but he was often busy training or helping the WNRN interns. When he did speak, he was always jovial, thoughtful, and funny. Tim had a natural charisma born of confidence and a clear glee for life. I didn't know Tim that well, so this is not my story, and yet we all share in Tim's story. On Monday, April 5th, Tim and a friend were sitting at the Rock Point Overlook on the Blue Ridge Parkway watching a lovely sunset when a stranger to them pulled up in his car, pointed a shotgun out the window, and shot them both. Tim, who lived with muscular dystrophy and sometimes used a wheelchair, fell down a 150-foot embankment. His friend survived, but a few days later, Tim Davis died of his injuries. This is a story of courage, of 18-year-old Christina Floyd, who, despite her gunshot wounds, fought the gunmen, of the rescuers who clambered down a rocky precipice of downed trees and debris to successfully bring aid to the wounded Tim Davis, and of the citizen who provided the tip to police that led to the arrest of 56-year-old Ralph Leon Jackson, who now sits in jail awaiting trial for the shootings. It is also the story of a community, our region of Charlottesville, which has to deal with another senseless murder, of WNRN, this very station where Tim worked and was respected and cared for, as we all adjust to the fact that one of our own is gone, and yet his work remains to be done. And of course, of Tim's family and close friends who are experiencing an unimaginable loss and who must live every day with a hole in their hearts and in their lives. But even those who did not know Tim or did not know him well have a part in this story. Tim died because a coward with a gun decided to just go kill someone that day. In a state where legislators fight to overturn sensible gun control legislation, because apparently being able to buy one gun a month just isn't enough. In a country where citizens who hold differing political views hurl invectives at one another, spit on lawmakers, and cut the gas lines to a congressman's brother's house. Under a federal government that declares war on other nations, then fights those wars with underfunded soldiers, overpaid contractors, and remote-controlled flying weapons. In a world where the voice of the calm and the rational and the adult is lost in the endless bleeding of the fearmongers who scream about taking up arms against lost liberties, and we should all be working together to secure our lives and our welfare. Under this constant drumbeat of violence and nonsense, we are shocked when a man grabs a gun and randomly shoots two of our neighbors. We are shocked. But are we really surprised? So long, Tim. I did not know you well, but I know you are a good man. You're gone from us too soon, and I'm hopeful that your death will cause everyone to pause, take a breath, turn to a stranger and say, "Friend, let's work through our differences. Your presence made this a better world, and may your passing do the same." All right. It's the wake-up call. If you want to call in, the WNRN studio number is 434-979-0919. Toll-free number is 877-967-6762. You can reach us at StarNRN on Intello Wireless or on AOL Instant Messenger at WNRN Studio. And our guest today, I'm going to do a microphone check, is Greg Kassar. Greg, did I get that right?
Kassar, yeah.
Kassar, Greg Kassar. A third-year political and social thought major who got involved with the living wage movement this fall. Joe, help me with your last name again.
Hennekins.
Joe Hennekins, a second-year student in the architecture school who joined the campaign his first year. And Merrill Goldstein, a first-year student at UVA, just beginning to participate in this campaign. Now, I keep talking about the living wage campaign because I think that's how we know it in the news, but you're actually representatives of a group called WASU, Workers and Students United. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And I've got some information from you. I'm going to try to say this a few times, but if you're interested in the Living Wage campaign, you have a website. The website I found was at livingwage.wordpress.com. Is that the best website to go to?
That's correct.
Okay, good. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what is the Living Wage campaign and what is WASU?
Well,
and do you call it WASU? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah. We usually call it WASU for short.
Okay.
WASU is an organization that has actually existed for more years than we have been here, and it stands for Workers and Students United. So part of what Workers and Students United is working on is the Living Wage campaign. But Workers and Students United, as a greater organization, actually doesn't just include workers and students, but is a community organization for anyone who wants to join, from professors to staff to community members employed in all sorts of different sectors. But it's definitely focused on the special relationship between workers and students at the University of Virginia. And we are especially working on creating a greater respect between workers and students and a greater respect between the university and workers, acknowledging that these aren't really separate, but we should really think of it as them being together, being one community where everyone should respect one another's dignity. And so the Living Wage campaign is part of that effort. And thinking about having just wages, that way everyone at the university can provide for their families and have a wage that gives them a decent quality of life. Thinking about that, I think, will really help us think about respecting everyone.
Okay, so you said this campaign has been around longer than you've been students at the school. So I think we remember, community members may remember news a few years ago when there were sit-ins in the president's office and people getting arrested, and might remember vaguely that, well, wait a minute, didn't that succeed? Didn't somebody institute a living wage? So let's go back a little bit in history and talk about the roots of this group, and realize you've already told me it started before you were students here. But give your historical perspective, as you understand it, on the beginnings of this campaign.
Right, well, there's been a living wage campaign at UVA, as far as I'm aware, since at least the mid-90s. It's sort of been ebbs and flows and comes back with different times. And the major thing that you're talking about was in 2006. And I was still living at home, and even I remember reading about it in the Washington Post. It was even news back there.
Yeah, it was national news.
Yeah. And so at that point, they were fighting for 1052, which was the living wage at the time, for Charlottesville, Albemarle area. And it was a very contentious debate, and there was a huge teach-in, and then there was a sit-in at Madison Hall where some students and professors were arrested, which I think is probably the biggest news generator. And at that point, they were trying to negotiate with President Castine, and it didn't succeed. The city of Charlottesville ended up passing a living wage for its direct and contracted workers.
Yeah, for Charlottesville.
Which was huge accomplishment, and it was meant to sort of push the university towards that, but the university refused at the time, and the campaign eventually sort of fizzled out. It's always been sort of burning underneath the radar, and then last year, a few of us who'd always hear people talk about it, but never really, there wasn't actually like a group that was active at the point.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of restarted Workers and Students United to try to fight for a new living wage. And now with our new president coming in, we think it's a great opportunity to sort of get over those old contentious divisions between us versus Castine or whatever, and sort of work together with the administration to achieve this.
Right. And when you say the new president, you're talking about Teresa Sullivan, new president of the university.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get to her in a moment, but I'd like to take a moment to have all of you speak a little bit about yourselves, who you are. I gave short biographies at the beginning. You're all students. And what brought you to this program? And Merrill, we haven't heard from you yet. So tell us a little bit
Thanks,
about that.
Thanks, Sean. Well, I recently became more involved in the Living Wage campaign here because I actually attended an educational forum that Workers and Students United held about a month ago. And I was really impressed by just the room full of passionate people who saw this issue, saw that it had been tackled in the past with some success and some failure, and were coming together again really to take advantage of what I think is a great opportunity and a great time to seize, where there's really a chance to make a huge impact, as there are so many changes going through the university committee. And I'd heard a little from Greg, actually, about this campaign in the past, but being in the room and seeing all the facts and figures presented together in front of such an audience really made a big impression. And I saw a great opportunity to mobilize a large group of people, and there's already a lot of faculty involved and people in the greater Charlottesville community on board with this. So it seemed like a great opportunity. And I was also really, really impressed by the sense of respect within that community, not just for the workers, but also for the university itself, and with the angle that everybody was really trying to take as a respectful one when tackling this issue.
That's great. And you mentioned community involvement. We'll get back to that in a minute. We are talking to representatives from the Workers and Students United about the Living Wage campaign at UVA. If you're interested in calling in, you can reach WNRN Studio at 434-979-0919. Toll free at 877-967-6762 or star NRN on Intellis Wireless or AOL Instant Messenger at WNRN Studio. Support today comes from Jean Theory with a selection of new and gently used designer denim, including Joe's, Page, William Rass, Sevens, and Citizens, as well as tops, dresses, and accessories. Gently used items can be purchased up front from customers, too. Jean Theory is on 4th Street Northeast on the Downtown Mall in Charlottesville. For more info, it's 296-JEAN or shopjeantheory.com. You can also find Jean Theory on Facebook and Twitter. All right, we're talking to three students here from UVA who are involved in the Living Wage campaign. Joe, why don't you step in here and tell us a little bit more about who you are and what got you involved with Workers and Students United.
Okay. Well, my name's Joe. I'm originally from Arlington, Virginia. I'm a second-year architecture student. And my first year, I was getting involved in a few groups, and particularly one of them, Virginia Organizing Project, which is a sort of a social justice group that's based here in Charlottesville, but they had a campus chapter. And at the meetings there, people would talk about the past Living Wage campaign, but never really talk about it at length. And when I'd ask questions about it, people would never really know. It was like sort of this vague, obscure thing that happened in the past. And like I said, it was also vaguely on my radar from reading about it in the news. And so a few of us, after one meeting, were just talking about it one day, and we decided that we would like to try to restart it, because obviously it's still an issue, and it gets more of an issue every year, because every year that there's not a wage increase, the wages fall further below living wage because of inflation. So
sure.
We decided to try to restart it and just sort of have a sustainable long-term group, not to sort of get over this thing where we fight and then we go to summer vacation and so then we forget about it and then a new group comes in and restarts everything. So we're sort of looking to launch sort of a long-term sustainable organization that was focused on Workers and Students United in general, not just a living wage. And so we got together and we started really small. And now this year, a few students came back from abroad and stuff, and it's really sort of picked up steam. And with President-elect Sullivan, we're really excited about the opportunity this year. So.
Okay, so Meryl, you're a first-year student.
Yes, correct.
Joe, you're a second-year student. Greg, you're a third-year student.
Right.
Have you been involved with this program your entire time here? And how do you balance this and being a student at the same time?
Well, this is actually a great opportunity for me to talk about how I really see the Living Wage Campaign and Workers and Students United as part of my academic experience at UVA, so I don't really see them as separate. Mm-hmm. At first, when I first heard about the Living Wage Campaign, it was actually through classes, and I'm a political and social thought major, so I heard a lot about the politics of different kinds of minimum wage increases, about the economy, learning all this stuff through books and in classes. But it never really got me towards action because it was just sort of seemed theoretical. But soon, during my second year, I began speaking with and having conversations with workers at the university, contracted and direct employees. I'm also, my family is from Mexico, so I speak Spanish fluently. So I also sometimes later at night spoke with some of the Latino employees in Spanish and started to hear about and learn their stories. And it just all of a sudden became personally appalling to me the sorts of situations that some of our very own members of our community are being put through because of their lower wages. And so I also am a volunteer at Charlottesville High School. And as I work tutoring with some more struggling students, all of a sudden this all became more connected for me because I started hearing about how some of my very own students had parents employed at the university, having to work double shifts, having to get up at 4 a.m. to make overtime at 5 a.m. At very low wages. So to me, this isn't something that I have to balance with my academic life. It's actually intricately connected to my academics. Here at UVA, I have learned about, you know, Thomas Jefferson's values of justice, equality, the pursuit of happiness. And then at the same university, I have seen the failings of this. And so I see this as an integral part of my learning and of just being here in Charlottesville, that we should create an environment that is helpful and just for everyone. And so I've seen sort of my academics and my life outside of academics as coming together in this way.
President Greg Kasar, Joe Hunnikins, and Merrill Goldstein of Workers and Students United at UVA. Greg, I'm gonna pick up that thread because you mentioned something about full-time workers and contract workers. Can you help explain the difference for people who are outside of the university and how the different wage rates apply to those people?
Sure. So direct employees are employed, as the word direct says, directly by the university. But the university has also begun to privatize some of its workers and hires contractors to get certain jobs done. So the university will say that a particular job needs to get done, for instance, a construction project, such as the new South Lawn project or the amphitheater renovation project, or certain dining work needs to be provided. That way there will be food for students. So the university publicizes it needs to get a job done and will oftentimes offer this job to a company that will provide the work for the lowest cost. Unfortunately, this oftentimes pushes those companies to reduce the wages of their workers. So these contractors often pay their workers even less than what the university declares that it pays its workers. So the university says it pays its workers $10.15 an hour, which we will hopefully talk about later is too low actually by Charlottesville's cost of living to pay for the needs of a family if you have two wage earners. But what happens with contractors is many of them pay their workers much less than $10.15 an hour. I've spoken with workers who are paid under $9 an hour. And so the Living Wage Campaign is working for all workers, whether they are direct or contracted employees, to be paid an indexed living wage. That way they can pay for just their basic needs.
Okay, I want to discuss more of the difference between contract workers and wage workers in just a moment. But first, I need to say that the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley is sunny today with a high of 60 to 65, mid-50s in the valley. Clear tonight with a low of 33 to 38, lower 40s in Richmond. Then sunny tomorrow with a high of 63 to 68 degrees. Right now in the valley, it's 48, 52 in Lynchburg, partly cloudy, 53 in Richmond, and 51 degrees in Charlottesville at WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town.
Well, this is the Wake-Up Call. I'm not sure what happened to the intro, but we're back on the air with students from the Living Wage Campaign, Greg Kasar, Joe Hunnikins, and Merrill Goldstein. Greg, you were talking a moment ago about contract workers and wage workers. Merrill, I want to give you and Greg a chance to step in too. So, okay, I work at the university, so I am a state employee, and I understand that there are distinctions now between state employee and university employees. But these contract workers, they're not state employees, are they? Greg, you want to step in?
No, they aren't university workers.
Joe Hunnikins.
So the university contracts, I mean, all universities contract, and obviously there's a need. Like, the university can't just, for example, like, employ its own, you know, web designer when it only needs a web designer for, you know, 3 weeks. So that's where a contract's necessary. But increasingly, the university contracts out really big functions that they traditionally perform, such as the dining halls or cleaning services. And that is just because to save money, but to save money through lower wages, not necessarily through eliminating waste or whatever. So we're just sort of, a theme of Workers and Students United that we're looking to, looking at the contracting policies, and we're saying that instead of just lowest bid contracts, we think that we need contracts that bear in mind community needs and worker concerns and student concerns, sort of like reshift the contracting paradigm to include the community because, and the students and the workers, because instead of just this constant low bidding process leads to lower and lower wages.
And currently the university states that it takes contracts at quote-unquote best value, and best value has been interpreted by the university and particularly by President Castine as meaning lowest cost, but we would like to really think about best value meaning taking care of the human beings in our community and paying them an adequate wage. So best value, the best thing is for everyone to be happy and be respected, not necessarily just for the lowest cost.
Okay, well, my understanding is that UVA currently pays its employees a minimum of, I got $10.14 an hour. Joe or Greg, I think you said $10.15 earlier, but it's somewhere in that range, plus benefits. And WASU, Workers and Students United, is asking for $11.44. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay. So, Merrill, where do these numbers come from? Is $11.44 based on two wage earners in a family? And is this enough for a single wage earner?
Well, the numbers are really drawn out with taking into account every need that a family of four would need to sustain its family with two working parents. And this takes into account childcare. It takes into account things like electricity, transportation to and from work, which is essential, meals at a very minimal basic cost. So just the bare minimum it takes to sustain a family of four with both parents working full-time jobs at the lowest possible cost. And if you look at the numbers very closely, as drawn up by economists in Charlottesville and in a broader national community, you can really see that the numbers that that workers are paid today at the university are not substantial. They're not enough.
Well, then let's ask, is $11.44 an hour enough?
We're trying to make sort of a best effort. So we're actually, 11.44 is actually quite a low number. As calculated by the Economic Policy Institute, this is actually the cost of food, for instance, that we are calculating at $11.44 an hour is assuming that people only spend $1.50 for every single meal. So any meal that's spent over $1.50 all of a sudden bumps that $11.44 to $11.45 or $12 an hour.
And they're clearly not eating in the cafeteria where they work.
Exactly. Which is $10 a meal if you don't have a meal plan.
Right.
Yeah. So the actual $10.15 an hour would push, for instance, the cost of food under $1.50 a meal. And furthermore, although the university states that it pays a minimum of $10.14 an hour, many of the direct employees that we have interviewed are actually paid just $10 an hour flat. And then that doesn't even take into consideration the hundreds of contracted employees who may be paid even less than that, but the university does not ask questions.
Well, now, what about benefits? Because the university has been very generous with its benefits. And I've heard some estimates that the benefits you get, you know, with medical and dental and educational benefit, I've heard some estimates that say that adds up to the equivalent of $7 an hour to your salary. Doesn't the university already give very generous benefits? And I guess the other side of that question is, how do those benefits apply, or do they apply to contract workers?
Well, they don't apply to contract workers, and that's one of the reasons that the university looks to contract is because they don't need to provide those benefits. And it is true that the university does provide good benefits, and obviously we aren't against good benefits. But we last year actually took a look at some of those numbers because we received that number to about $7 extra an hour. And that factors in a variety of benefits that are very questionable whether they're actually used, such as there's a for getting free membership to the AFC is included as a really large. They take the number that would cost at a normal gym and then factor that into the extra $7 an hour. And there's stuff like tuition for students, tuition the students of employees.
But gym membership isn't free. You still have to
no,
pay.
No, yeah, of course not. But I don't go to the gym that much, but every time I'm there, I've never noticed any, you know, worker using the gym facilities because they're working, you know, a lot. And even if it is, I just think, in general, the thing is not necessarily that direct employees, they do have great benefits, but we're focusing on this contract employees don't receive any of those benefits, and they make lower wages, so they're really getting the short end of the stick in both regards. So that's why I think this time around we're trying to focus on both direct and contracted, bringing parity between them, and bringing up the wages.
Okay.
Notice that to know that 1144 is a floor. So when we talk about this, it's not like sort of something has to give if you aren't making 1144. Either people are using social services, which ultimately we as taxpayers end up paying for, or they're living really far away and commuting for cheaper housing or something. But essentially 1144 is a base, and if you aren't making that, something's giving. It's not just like this can happen and they can just live on that.
All right, you're listening to the Wake Up Call on WNRN. We're listening to representatives from the Workers and Students United about the Living Wage Campaign. If you have questions, you can call WNRN Studio at 434-979-0919 or toll free at 877-967-6762. Star NRN on Intellis Wireless or AOL Instant Messenger at WNRN Studios. Today's programming on WNRN is also being brought to you with the support of Blue Ridge Graphics, Mead Avenue at East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. That number on page 739 of the Charlottesville Yellow Pages and brgtshirts.com. Okay, so again, looking at your own website at livingwage.wordpress.com, I see a quote from university spokesperson Carol Wood that says that less than 2%, that's 333 out of over 20,000 university academic employees, earn between $10.14 and $11.71 an hour. So aren't we talking about a very small number of people?
I think this is a really interesting number, Sean. First of all, if it was a very small number of people, then I don't understand why the university would not just solve this problem immediately. But to me, over 300 people is actually quite a large number of people that are actually being pushed into very precarious and difficult situations by being underpaid. Furthermore, I think that is definitely more than 300 people because this number that is being provided as only 300 people being paid these low wages does not include workers in the medical center. And when we did research back in 2006, taking the medical center into account over doubled the number of underpaid workers. Finally, Carol Wood's number does not take into account contracted employees. And the university actually has refused to give us the information as to how many contracted employees are paid that amount. The university says that it does not ask contractors how much it pays, how much the contractors pay their workers, which sounds very convenient.
Okay, so Carol Wood says only 2%. You dispute those numbers and say, of those 2%, why not just give them a living wage? How much is it going to cost? And I guess that is a compelling question, especially with the General Assembly denying employee salary increases for next year. How do we justify increases for wage workers in these fiscal times, and where's the money going to come from?
Well, I think this returns to what Greg was saying about the question of value. What do we as a university value in our community? Do we value, you know, projects like maintaining buildings, maintaining the grounds, maintaining the external, the things that you see when you first look at the community, or do we want to take into account the wider community itself and the people that actually maintain those buildings and maintain those grounds? I think it's very important to make that connection between who actually does the work, puts in the effort that maintains everything going on here. For example, I live in dorms, and you know, we as students don't clean our own bathrooms. We don't clean our own common rooms and our hallways, and we do reap all those benefits. That frees us up to have time to pursue our greater standard of living, our education. Whereas those people who are cleaning the bathrooms and who are cleaning the hallways don't necessarily see any sort of benefits. And I think it's important, yes, we acknowledge that these are very difficult times financially, but when we're drawing up our budget, we need to take into account that those people who have the lowest wages are hit the hardest in times of financial crisis, and that if we really truly have a strong sense of community at the university and uphold our values, then we need to take those people's needs into account first, because they're the most strongly affected.
And I think that, Meryl, you make a great point. I think right now, in the time of financial recession, is exactly the time that we need to move on this issue. Because recessions are going to come and go. The bubbles will grow and crash. And we need to plan long-term for how we are going to handle these sorts of situations. And I think it's essential for the university to make a statement that we are going to protect the people that are most vulnerable to these sorts of situations. And so those people exist within our community, and we have a responsibility to take care of them regardless of what the financial situation is. So I think the General Assembly is smart to protect our budget, and perhaps it is wise to freeze the wages and salaries of employees, for instance, our coaches who are paid over $1 million a year, but the employees who are being paid under $10 an hour, I think right now is the time to help them out.
So as I walk around the university, and I walk through the lawn and I see a groundskeeper, or I go into the cafeteria and I'm served food, I work late in my office and I see someone emptying the trash, how do I distinguish between a university wage worker and a contract employee?
Oftentimes it's very difficult to tell. Usually the university direct workers are actually wearing a sort of like University of Virginia badge. You can see a rotunda or something of that nature. But I think the point that Workers and Students United is trying to make is that there really shouldn't be a difference. They're all working for the university. So there really shouldn't be, we shouldn't be treating people differently. And unfortunately, we have seen how the university has created that difference and used it as an excuse to not pay contracted workers as much. So I think that everybody is working for the university, and therefore everyone is part of our community. We have a responsibility to everyone.
Well, how do the laws work? When a university contracts with a vendor, does the nature of the contract or the nature of the law in Virginia allow them to set what the minimum wage are going to be for contract workers?
Well, yeah, that's been a question all along. Like we were talking about best value contracts, they don't define best value as lowest bid, but they do define that you need to take best value contracts. So three municipalities in Virginia, Charlottesville City, City of Alexandria, and Arlington County, all have living wage ordinances for their contracted employees. So they make contracts that write in wage stipulations. So it is in practice in three places in our Commonwealth, and it has not been declared illegal yet at all. There's just a definition of best value to take into consideration things like wages and actually how these contracts affect our communities rather than just lowest bid.
And also, a living wage has been instituted in over 50 U.S. localities in recent years, including places like Oakland, Miami, Baltimore, San Francisco. And studies have been done in all of these places where the living wage has actually benefited the local economy of the community and especially benefited those people who have had moderate increases in their wages.
Okay. I'm going to play devil's advocate for just a moment here before I let this topic go, because university is supported by state funds, by tuition. It's a public university. So isn't it in our best interest as taxpayers for the university to try to get the best deal possible?
That's something, I know that in my family, you know, my mom, like, struggles to pay the tuition, and I'm a Virginia Tech taxpayer, and so are both of my parents. And I think that, for me personally at least, it's sort of the opposite thing, that since I know that I struggle to pay the tuition and I pay taxes in Virginia, I think that that makes me a stakeholder in the university. And so the idea that my tuition or my parents' tuition money and my taxes, my parents' taxes, are being used to pay poverty wages and to keep people in poverty is like Greg said, it's personally appalling. And so I would argue actually that because it's a public institution, that's what sets this apart, that this isn't just saying every business in Charlottesville should pay a living wage. It's saying that this is a public institution. It's owned by us as citizens of Virginia, and therefore it should benefit citizens of Virginia, and that includes the workers.
Greg mentioned something about when you give people a living wage, they turn around and contribute more to the community. Can you spell that out a bit more for us?
Well, a lot of different studies have shown that if you increase the wages of higher paid employees, oftentimes they might invest it, but they might invest it in stock markets outside of the local community. But people who are being paid these lower wages actually invest that extra money directly into the local economy, buying things that they might need, such as food, clothing, paying better rents, or buying used cars in the area, things of this nature, as well as getting off of sometimes ineffective social safety nets. So actually on Monday, that's tomorrow, at 7 p.m., Workers and Students United is going to appear before City Council, and we're proposing a resolution co-written by us and worked along with City Council person Kristen Sakos, which is stating that Charlottesville taxpayers are actually subsidizing the university. So Charlottesville taxpayers have to pay for social safety nets that university workers who are underpaid have to therefore use. So something that really moved me and pushed me more towards working on this campaign was hearing from people at the Hope Community Center and at different other soup kitchens and shelters, where I've heard stories about people who are working full-time at the university who have to sleep in a homeless shelter or use a soup kitchen. And so the city is actually going to hopefully pressure the university to make this change.
Well, okay, I want to hear more about the City Council resolution and about your future plans in just a moment.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Well, forget the noise ordinance. 12 local bands to watch in 2010 are making sound waves that will be heard far beyond Belmont. Halsey Miner, the millionaire founder of CNET and downtown developer, whose Midas touch has become burnished following the work stoppage at what was to be a luxury hotel on the Charlottesville downtown mall, now finds himself atop California's list of delinquent taxpayers. And family and friends of accused Blue Ridge Parkway shooter Ralph Leon Jackson express shock at his crime, while the WNRN family sadly says goodbye to one of our own. All that and more in this week's The Hook. Stop, look, and listen. The Hook. And support for WNRN is also comes from Specialty Guitars Plus in Charlottesville, where beginners and rock stars are welcome. Specialty Guitars Plus features instruments, amps, and lessons on guitar, banjo, bass, piano, and violin for beginners or advanced students. Consignments are welcome, too. That's Specialty Guitars Plus in the Woodbrook Shopping Center on the lower level behind 7-Eleven. More is at SpecialtyGuitarsPlus.com. All right, this is the Wake Up Call. We are talking about the Living Wage Campaign. If you're interested in calling in, WNRN studio number is 434-979-0919. Toll free at 877-967-6762 or star NRN on Intellis Wireless. Or you can instant messenger us at AOL. The address is WNRN studio. We're talking to Merrill Goldstein, Joe Hunnikins and Greg Kasar from Workers and Students United. So, Virginia is a so-called right-to-work state, which means, as far as I can understand, that there are restrictions on allowing workers to organize in labor unions. What is your understanding of that law? How is it affecting the living wage campaign? And what are you doing within the limits of that law to help workers organize together?
Well, I think
Meryl Goldstein.
And that issue has come up with Workers and Students United. As you look at just the membership of our organization, you don't see workers making up a huge basis of our membership, because there are risks involved with workers organizing at the university. People will lose their jobs if they speak out, and if they join our organization, they do face a huge risk. So people are reluctant. So we are kind of taking it on as our responsibility to speak for them. We've spoken to people. We do use anonymous testimonies. So people's voices are being heard, but we kind of see it as our job to raise the issues that maybe people don't have the power to raise themselves.
Well, tell me about these meetings. Now, you've recently reorganized, Greg. You said that there's been an effort to kind of revivify this group after it was dormant for a few years. So tell me about the sort of people who are showing up at these meetings. And what kind of resolutions are coming forth?
We have all sorts of people show up to our meetings. We've had community members, workers from Food Not Bombs. We've had plenty of students come through, and we also oftentimes have meetings with professors. And so we're really working to bring together everyone who supports this movement through meeting on a weekly basis or meeting on one-on-one basis throughout the week. So I've found that there's just enormous amounts of support for this issue, and we are just trying to come up with every different sort of way that we can pressure incoming President Sullivan to speak with us. That way we can work with her on sort of looking at the budget and figuring out how we can include everyone in the budget and not just students and high-paid administrators and sports coaches. And so this coming week, tomorrow we are going to City Council, and we are proposing a resolution that City Council will then vote on May 3rd. So everyone and anyone is invited to come to City Council downtown on Monday at 7 p.m. to come hear that resolution be proposed. And then again on Monday, May 3rd, to come see that resolution be voted on by City Council. Also, this coming Wednesday in Clark Library, Room 108, Workers and Students United is working along with the Human Rights Film Festival that's going on to show The Take at 7 p.m., which is a film about Argentinian workers and their fight for their rights. And actually at 8:30, immediately after that, we are coming together to have a letter writing workshop where all the different students who are interested in the Human Rights Film Festival, as well as Workers and Students United, will write letters to Teresa Sullivan telling her that we look for her leadership on this issue. And so we really see things like local activism in City Council, human rights, whether locally or abroad, and worker and students relations, all of these things sort of coming together, and all sorts of different people who are interested in these sorts of things coming together to democratically decide what is right for our public institution.
Okay, we mentioned the website earlier. That was livingwage.wordpress.com. So people can go to this website and get information about all these upcoming events.
Yes, all our events are posted at our website, and our email address is also posted there, so anyone who's interested can email us and get posted on an email thread where we'll send out monthly updates on the events that we will be holding.
And what is that email address?
It's livingwage@UVA, but it's livingwageatuva@gmail.com.
Okay, so it's livingwage@UVA spelled out, and then the at sign. And then gmail.com.
Okay. That's correct.
I was looking at the website earlier, and I saw mention of an upcoming Employee Appreciation Week. Somebody want to tell me more about that?
UVA Employee Appreciation Week is another important part of what Workers and Students United is looking for. The Living Wage Campaign is just one part of changing the worker-student paradigm and making the community more respectful of everyone. Worker Appreciation Week involves students having baked goods and cooking baked goods with workers, writing thank you notes for workers, and then Wednesday and Thursday of this week, there will actually be meets and eats in which workers and students can get together at different places on grounds on our lunch breaks and have pizza informally together, make friendships, and have casual interaction. So Worker Appreciation Week is not particularly focused on the living wage, but it is focused on connecting students and workers. At the university, there is an unspoken culture where students and workers don't really interact or get to know one another. There's 20,000 students and 20,000 workers, but there really isn't much connection right now between those two communities, and I think that creates sort of a lot of miscommunication and misunderstandings. So I think that if workers and students really come together to speak to one another, we can really push issues and really look at what all of our needs are.
We've got a call coming in. I'm going to try very hard to pick this up and not press the wrong button. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I don't normally call these shows, but I just had a comment that I think would kind of help the cause, and I had a couple questions about some comments that you all have made. I just listened for the last 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay.
But first of all, I am a business owner. I have about 26 employees. I contract with the university, so I can't speak for university employees that are directly hired and work for UVA, but there could be a lot of problems solved if the university wasn't so focused on using outside contractors that provide the lowest bids. I mean, we work for the University of Richmond, we work for a bunch of different universities in the area, and UVA always chooses the lowest bidder for the work that we're contracted to do, so we often lose business. So I think if you're focusing on trying to get employees better wages, they should start at the top, and they should start reviewing the companies that do business for the university more thoroughly, and they should start choosing them based on the quality of their work and the benefits and the pay that they offer their employees, not just the lowest price they can provide.
So you have a Virginia business. In your business,
yes,
you service other universities around the area. But
yeah,
you've been unable to get a contract with UVA because you're not always the lowest bid.
Well, exactly. I mean, and the work that we do, I don't want to get into too many details, but I'm just saying when we're contracting with somebody like the University of Richmond, they will look at the quality and they'll look at the service. And then when we're trying to contract with the University of Virginia, they'll look at the lowest cost. And oftentimes they're using contractors that are not paying the wage that we're paying, and they're not even concerned with what's going on behind the scenes with each business they're contracting with. They're more concerned with the lowest cost for the bid. I mean, I'm registered with EDA. I mean, we're registered to do business at the university, but that doesn't make a difference if they're looking at the lowest cost each time.
All right. Well, thank you.
I mean, and the other thing I have to say is I just heard someone make a comment, oh, these employees will be fired if they join these groups. I mean, I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I think that the burden is on the employees that work at UVA that feel they're not getting paid enough to better themselves. I think UVA should, instead of mandating some sort of pay rate, they should consider giving some kind of benefits for increasing education or increasing their abilities so that they can move up. I mean, this is America. They don't have to be stuck in these jobs. If they don't feel they're getting paid enough, there's plenty of people that will do the work.
All right. Well, thank you for your comments, and thank you for listening to The Wake Up.
All right, guys. Well, good luck with it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, do you find much in there that you can agree with?
Well, Sean, I think it goes back to your question that you asked earlier about what is the best deal for the university, and this clearly demonstrates that. Maybe seemingly on the surface, when the university is setting its budget, it seems like taking the bidder with the lowest wage rate, the lowest cost, is the best deal for the university. But oftentimes, it negatively impacts the broader Charlottesville community and therefore UVA, which is a part of the wider community.
Well, we just heard a businessman come on the air and said he'd be interested in doing business with UVA, but he offers a higher salary. So Have you been able to approach some of the contractors, some of the vendors that the university is working with directly, and talk to them about offering a living wage?
We have spoken with a couple of contractors, but we haven't really gotten to the point where we're making particular demands yet, because we see this not necessarily as something we need to work with contractors with, but more with the university, because it's what the university's policies are that will determine the wages, not necessarily what the contractors promise to pay. Because as you heard, even if a contractor decides they will pay a living wage, then they might not get that contract. So we want to work with the university to hire contractors who can pay a living wage. Also, we want to work with the university so that contracts are not necessarily lost because of these wage increases. So we really want to work on the community, on people who live here in Charlottesville. We want to keep local business in, and we want to keep these wages at a respectable level. Also, we heard from this gentleman who called in that the workers should perhaps educate themselves so that they can get higher paying jobs. But many of the workers that I've spoken to personally, you know, they're working two jobs, because if they're being paid under $10 an hour, they're working two jobs and they're trying to get their kids through school. I don't really see them having time to necessarily get a college diploma and then get a job, even in this really tough job market. So I think what we should really be working on and focusing on is everyone, no matter what job they have, if they're working a full-time job, they should be able to pay for their housing, pay for their heat, pay for their clothing and their kids' education.
And just one thing I thought that was interesting on the caller is talking about quality. It's not just about wages, but when you have this lowest cost bidder policy, you also miss out on quality, because we aren't looking at the quality of the contracts, we're just looking at the bottom line. So I thought that was really interesting that the caller mentioned.
Support for WNRN today is also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where April is Trail Running Month. The staff at Blue Ridge can fit you from a selection of over 40 brands of shoes, socks, quick dry shorts and tops, plus hydration packs and backpacking supplies. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, Charlottesville, Lexington Commons, and Chesterfield Town Center, Richmond, and at brms.com. Fry Springs Beach Club and 20 South Productions are proud to present Sentimental Journey, playing big band and swing, Saturday, April 24th from 8 till midnight. The show is all ages and will be at Fry Spring, with all proceeds benefiting the Charlottesville Professional Firefighters Association and Veteran Services Foundation. More info is at fsbc.net or on the NRN studio line. And finally, today at noon, join Drew Thompson for Les Temps Perdus, the best of the 80s and 90s alternatives. There will be no Whitesnake or Backstreet Boys, but you will hear Tori Amos, Depeche Mode, and Cracker. Requests are always welcome. That's Les Temps Perdus, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music and Basil. All right, so we mentioned earlier about the new university president coming in. And I take it from what you said, part of having a new president was part of the inspiration for getting your group back together, that you see this as an opportunity to start fresh with new administration. So let me ask what you've been doing to approach the president's office, and have you heard anything back yet?
Well, Merrill mentioned earlier a forum that was held back in March. In March, we brought together almost 100 people for 3 hours to talk about this issue. And all of those people signed a letter that we wrote to President Sullivan looking for her leadership, letting her know that we want to work with her on this issue. We have really high hopes about President Sullivan coming in. Where she worked back in the University of Texas for a couple of decades, a living wage, we believe, actually is being paid by the University of Texas to workers in Austin. And she's currently the provost at Michigan.
Okay, so I want to say this again.
Right.
University of Texas is offering a living wage.
Right, and that's where President Sullivan worked for many, many years. Now, she is now a provost at Michigan. And from the information we've gathered, the wage policies at Michigan are better than here at UVA, but they are not. It's not a living wage. But we haven't really done, you know, we haven't had an entire research project in Michigan, because we're based here in Charlottesville, not in Ann Arbor. But we haven't heard back from President Sullivan yet. on her letter, but we hope that she will write us back soon, get in touch with us, and then we can begin a conversation before she even comes into UVA, because this, I believe, is one of the most critical issues that she will have to handle when she gets on grounds.
Okay, so we have about 3 or 4 minutes left of the show. So I'd like to just hear a bit about, we know that you're going to City Council on Monday. We heard about the letter writing campaign on Wednesday. We heard about Employee Appreciation Month. Those are all kind of short, those are all things that you've planned right now. Are there other long-term campaigns that you haven't had a chance to mention here?
Well, a document called Keeping Our Promises was published in 2006. That was a detailed report with lots of information, really outlining what is happening at the university as far as wages. And we are working very hard on getting that updated for 2010. And we will get that done in May and most likely have a media release of that document in the incoming semester. So we're going to be working really hard over the next couple of weeks and probably over the summer to get all of that information out. Most importantly, we want to approach President Sullivan next semester about making these sorts of changes. And so I think that, our long-term goal for next year is to really work with her on this budget and have this really, what I think is a shameful policy, changed. Really this next month, I think we're focused on getting awareness up, and then next semester, as soon as President Sullivan is here, perhaps forming a committee to work with her on this issue.
Okay. So let's say everything falls into place. You get everything you want. You meet with the president. She's completely with you. The wage gets increased up to $11.44 an hour. So that's it. Is the job done? Does WASU fold its tents and go home? Or is there more in the future?
Well, Sean, I think it's important to recognize and emphasize that the living wage is only a component of our goals as an organization. As I think Greg mentioned earlier, $11.44 is only the bare minimum, with meals on $1.50 per meal per day for workers. And there's still a lot that can be changed, not only in regards to wages, but in regards to the sense of community and really the culture of appreciation at UVA. And the changes we would like to see happen there. So there definitely is opportunity beyond changing simply the budget allowances and the wage restrictions and the wage levels for
right.
workers.
And we really see $11.44 as a symbol, something that people mm-hmm. should think about. That way we can more create a more inclusive and respectful community for everyone. But right now we see that $11.44 is a great goal because, you know, Carol Wood says there's 333 workers being affected by this. We see there being actually over 1,000 workers being affected by this, which means there's over 1,000 families in Charlottesville that are having to face this struggle on a daily basis. So we still see the living wage as a more short-term or medium-term goal towards a longer-term goal of creating a more inclusive community where everyone is taken care of, where everyone can lead a decent standard of living for themselves and for their families.
Right. We think it's important to have tangible goals that we can reach for in regards to the bigger picture, but we are also only getting started.
Well, thank you very much. We've reached the end of the show. I hope this hour went by quickly for you. I think this is very informative. And again, if you're interested in the campaign, you can go to livingwage.wordpress.com and find out more. Drew Thompson is up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.